Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Kia ora, g'day, and welcome to the history of Aotearoa, New Zealand. Episode 130, Shogun. This podcast is recorded in Te Whanganui a Tara, on the rohe of Mueupoko, Taranaki Whānui, Te Atiawa, and Ngāti Toa Rangatira. We are generously supported by our amazing patrons, such as a fluffy duck. If you want to support Hans, go to patreon.com/historyaotearoa. Last time, we covered the early life of Abel Tasman, the first European who would find Aotearoa, as well as how he joined the Dutch East India Company and his first major voyage, which was planned and organised by the VOC's chief geographer, Franz Visscher, and Governor-General of the Dutch East Indies, Anthony van Diemen. Today, we will continue Tasman's story with the lead-up to his most famous voyage in 1642, starting with what was going down between the VOC and Tokugawa Iemitsu, Shogun of Japan. If you recall in the last episode, we talked about the VOC wanting to fund another voyage to do what the 1639 Quast expedition could not. That is, find the pair of islands east of Japan supposedly covered in gold and silver. However, they couldn't just grab a couple of ships and head off. There was a lot of planning involved with these sorts of things, such as in this case, they would need to choose a new route. And as it so happened, the powers at be were also keen to have Tasman involved once again. The power in particular I speak of was the VOC's upper merchant in Haredo, an island in Nagasaki Prefecture, southern Japan. He was a Frenchman by the name of François Caron, and as the upper merchant, Caron was essentially the leader of the VOC's operations in the area. He was very keen to get involved, perhaps in part because it seems that the new voyage was possibly going to take place much closer to mainland Japan, which was naturally his area of influence and expertise. In this capacity, Caron was given a chance to share his knowledge, and he gave the Batavian Council some interesting advice. Unlike many of the Europeans working under him, Caron was quite well acquainted with the mood and sentiments of the Japanese people. In fact, his wife was Japanese. So, when giving his recommendations to the council for how the voyage should be conducted, he advised that the ships should only land at Haredo, and under no circumstances should they land anywhere else on the Japanese coast, even if it was only to gather food. The reason for this advice was that over the last few decades, the Japanese had a growing animosity towards Europeans. As I record this, the TV show Shogun is just coming out, which is set approximately 40 years before the events that we're talking about now. So if you've seen that show, you'll be somewhat familiar with what I'm talking about. For those of you who haven't watched the show, there were a number of things that led to this tension between the two cultures, such as European ships landing wherever the hell they liked without prior notice. What was probably the bigger issue, though, was Europeans, namely the Spanish and Portuguese, converting locals to Christianity, which Tokugawa Iemitsu especially did not like. As such, Christians, whether they be Japanese or European, were heavily persecuted. Keep in mind that I am skipping over a lot here because it isn't directly relevant to us, but that's the general gist. All of this eventually culminated in a series of edicts put forth by the Japanese shogun, which essentially banned Europeans from the country, the Spanish in particular being ejected in 1624. The Portuguese seemed to mostly avoid this retribution for now, but were kept under strict watch. As for the Dutch, Tokugawa recognised that they were different to the other Europeans, on account of them being Protestant rather than Catholic. And since he still wanted some trade with Europe, he made a deal limiting their interactions to only a couple of ports in the south, one of those being Haredo. Despite this, the Dutch were still regarded with some suspicion and distrust. To say tensions were high would be an understatement, and things were about to get a whole lot worse. For right now, though, Tasman found himself in Haredo, after having been sent to give tribute to the shogun so that he would allow them to continue trading in his lands, which worked well enough, but didn't exactly improve relations either. While in Haredo, he was initially doing a bunch of trade missions around Batavia and Taiwan, whilst also helping to plan Quest 2 Electric Boogaloo. Tasman at this point had gained a lot of experience sailing, and it seems the VOC wanted to make good on that investment, because he spent a lot of time at sea during this period. It wasn't all swashbuckling shenanigans, though. As was company policy, while a fleet commander was in port, they were required to sit on the local council and contribute to decision-making of the local area. So while he was in Haredo, Tasman was in a minor position of power, which was an interesting position to be in, because shit hit the fan and the port was locked down, meaning no one was allowed to leave or enter. As it so happened, Vischer was stuck in Haredo as well. He had actually spent most of the last few years here and in the surrounding region, helping to update the old Portuguese maps the VOC had been using up until that point. So the pair were stuck together doing whatever lads do during lockdown. A lot of what happens between the shogun and Caron during this period isn't super relevant to us, other than to say that Tasman was present in Haredo for these events. He doesn't seem to have had a huge amount of influence on what was happening, despite being on the council. But in saying that, it is quite interesting, so here is a quick rundown. In 1640, a diplomatic mission from the Portuguese went to the shogun to ask that they be allowed to trade in more places around the country than just the couple of ports in the south. This was seemingly not well received by Tokugawa, because he executed all 61 men in the delegation. When word of this event reached Caron, he knew that even though this was directed at the Portuguese, that didn't mean it wouldn't blow back onto the Dutch. Though there was some hope that maybe this could be an opportunity to steal more trade from their enemies. This was a dangerous game to play, though, because their position was rather precarious. There had been a number of Japanese Christian rebellions across the country that Kiron had been nominally supporting, or at the very least, was not really taking an active hand to help the shogun try and put them down, which, naturally, Tokugawa was not happy about. It also didn't help that the Dutch buildings were a lavish display of wealth. They were huge, made of stone, and Caron's house in particular was adorned with gold, silver, and jewels, in comparison to the locals' more modest wooden houses. It was a rather obvious indicator of the difference in wealth, and just generally not a great look politically. The big warehouse that the VOC used to store goods was ordered to be torn down by the shogun, because it had a stone on it displaying the date it was constructed, but this used Christian symbols and a Western format, which was banned in Japan. Kiron did eventually comply with this order after a bit of back and forth, Tokugawa's fourth being a contingent of armed guards to make sure Kiron actually did as he was told, especially given this wasn't the first time he had been instructed to tear the warehouse down. After being forcefully asked to demolish a couple more buildings, in mid-1641, Kiron decided to cut his losses, ordering all business to cease and Haredo be evacuated. Before this kerfuffle, they had been doing a roaring trade, so Tokugawa offered the VOC to move to another spot in modern-day Nagasaki City, which Kiron accepted. This speaks a little to what the shogun actually wanted out of this whole situation. Trade with Europe was good, and still needed. He made money selling stuff like silk, while also getting European goods like muskets. Tokugawa wanted them to move away from their current location so he could remove Dutch trade from the Haredo clan specifically for political reasons, rather than stop all trade from Europe entirely. It was a delicate balance that needed to be struck. As I said, Tasman and Visscher weren't doing a huge amount during this period, since they weren't allowed to leave the port. But it does seem that while all of this was happening, they got chatting to each other. If they couldn't leave to do trade missions, there probably wasn't a huge amount else to do other than go to the pub and wait for the whole thing to blow over. In particular, their conversations included how they would go about doing a repeat of the Quast expedition. However, once Haredo was evacuated and the pair were able to return to Batavia, it seems that the whole situation with the shogun had put the Batavian council off the idea of any expeditions near Japan, just in case it inflamed things even more. Tasman and Visscher were still keen to get some sort of expedition off the ground, though. Both of them were very interested in exploration. That bug for being the first to see the unknown and the glory that comes with it seems to have bit them. So instead of looking for mysterious islands allegedly full of riches, the pair moved their eyes southward to a mysterious continent allegedly full of riches. That of Terra Australis, the great southern continent yet to be found. Or rather, I should say trio, because there is one more person in this little band that I have yet to mention who will be quite important going forward. Born in 1606, Isaac Gillesmans was born probably in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Unlike Tasman, who had a limited education but was very experienced in how to sail a ship, Gillesmans seems to have gotten a fairly decent education, which allowed him to quickly rise through the ranks of the VOC, despite his potentially limited experience at sea. People who knew how to best handle a ship and lead men into unknown waters were important to the company. But, as you might recall, the VOC had a rather large bureaucracy to manage all of its affairs. And so, accountants and other nerds were also very much in demand. This is the kind of space that Gillismans fit into. He was likely well-versed in navigation, seamanship, cartography, and all that, but this probably came from his academic education rather than lived experience. Unlike Tasman and Vischer, who both probably honed their skills on deck rather than at a desk. That isn't to say Gillismans had no experience. Sometime before he turned 27, he served in a military fleet, which was possibly involved in an attack on Cadiz in 1625, so he had experienced at least one sea battle. Something that is kinda interesting between Tasman and Gillismans is their handwriting, since examples of both men's penmanship survive to us today. Tasman has a rather messy and matter-of-fact style of writing, even in his signature, which is something you might expect of a person who perhaps sees literacy as a tool. Whereas Gillismans, on the other hand, writes in cursive, which was very unusual for someone regularly at sea. The ocean is often seen more as the domain of rough-and-ready sailors, and not soft and squishy nerds. But it does show that he was perhaps the most academically educated of the three, which could make up for his lack of experience. Gillismans left Europe in 1633, headed for the East Indies, to begin his contract with the VOC, which officially started in June the next year. Once there, he worked on the island of Ambon in Maluku as a clerk of the former governor of the island. He did this for about a year, but afterwards, we don't really know what he was up to, other than that his rank was changed from corporal to assistant. This indicates that he was changing from a military position to a more clerical one, so gives some hint as to what he may have been doing. We also know that by 1640 he was based in Heredo, meaning that he was also stuck in the port when things kicked off there. Given we know he was bit with the exploration bug as well, and that he would go on to be one of the advocates and organisers of the voyage that Tasman and Vischer were currently cooking up, we are fairly certain that he was involved in those early talks that were going on while Caron was trying to keep his head. In fact, the chart from the Quast expedition, which had detailed annotations of where they went, what they did, and all that kind of stuff, was used to help plan the voyage into the South Pacific. And a lot of that work landed on Gillismans. However, the first hurdle they needed to overcome was convincing the Batavian Council to approve the voyage, since they wouldn't be able to requisition ships, men, or supplies without their say-so. This mostly fell to Vischer, being the most experienced and trusted in navigational matters. We don't really know how those discussions went down, but it seems that the council were pretty keen on the basic concept, and so Tasman was given command of the expedition in November of 1641. Even without details of the route or goals of the voyage being finalised. It was a pretty big moment for Tasman. This was the first time he would be calling the shots in a big exploratory voyage, and although we don't know how he felt at the time, it's hard not to think that he wouldn't have been ecstatic, perhaps excitedly coming home to his family to tell them of his promotion. As I mentioned though, the details of the expedition had yet to be finalised. To that end, Vischer used the VOC's chart room in Batavia to write a document in January 1642, called, quote, "A Memoir Concerning the Discovery of the Southland," end quote. Though it has slightly different names depending on the translation from Dutch. Vischer, it seems, was a rather prolific writer, because around the same time he wrote two other documents, one called A Memorandum Touching the Discovery of the Northern Quarters of Japan, and the other A Dissertation on the Best Use of the Variation Compass. So that's pretty neat. In his dissertation on Terra Australis, he basically laid out the plan on where they would sail, what they hoped to find, and how this would benefit the VOC. I won't go too much into detail on this proposal, because a lot of this document actually ends up in the official instructions for the expedition, and we're going to spend the entire next episode talking about those. However, in terms of their sailing route, Vischer gave a couple of different options. One was that they could start in the Netherlands, sail to the Cape of Good Hope at the southern tip of Africa, head south to 52 degrees latitude, and then continue east, charting whatever islands they came across until they hit Terra Australis. From there, it would be a bit more at their discretion, because they actually didn't know the size of the continent or what they would find there. But the thought was that they would be able to reach a place called Staten Land in South America, to then sail across the Atlantic back home. Staten Land was a piece of land near the Strait of Magellan that was found by a Dutch guy called Lemaire just three decades prior in 1616. At this time, it was unknown what the extent of the land was. No one had sailed all the way around it just yet, and so some people thought that maybe it was part of Terra Australis, or at least very close to it. Given this plan involved a full circumnavigation of the globe, it was going to be rather costly. There was even the idea of setting up a refitting station in Chile to aid in the endeavour. So the other idea that Vischer proposed was similar, but probably significantly cheaper. Instead of starting in the Netherlands, they would sail from Batavia to Mauritius, off the east coast of Africa. From there, they would once again sail south to 52 degrees, and then east until they either hit something or reached the same longitude as the Solomon Islands, at which point they would sail north to head home. In both cases, Vischer was essentially proposing a voyage that would traverse, in his words, quote, the southern portion of the world all around the globe, and find out what it consists of, whether land, sea, or icebergs. All that God has ordained there, end quote. Just some fantastically grandiose wording there, possibly to get the council super hyped. However, anyone who has had to present a proposal to their bosses will know that, oftentimes, the big, expensive option is cut down due to cost. So if you propose what you actually want, then you'll get less than that, because all they see is the big number. But if you propose a bigger number, and then show your desired smaller one next to it, that looks much better. So they're more likely to go with what you want, because it's the cheaper option. It's all about context. It's unclear if this is what Vischer was doing, that he knew the idea would be scaled back when he presented it to Van Diemen, but it's possible that he proposed the Mauritius option knowing that the council would look at the two proposals and go with the less expensive one, which we do know is the one that Vischer actually wanted to do. Whatever the case, it worked like a charm. The Governor General didn't want to be too ambitious with life, resources, and money. If he overextended, then he could lose everything they put into it, and maybe even his position. So he decided to go with the Mauritius option. Preparations kicked off, and must have gone pretty rapidly, because Vischer wrote his memoir in January of 1642, which would dictate the route they would take, and as such was the basis of the supplies they would need to gather. You're not going to take the same amount of supplies for a 12-month voyage than you are for a 4-year voyage. So, presumably, there was only a limited amount of prep that they could do in the 2 months between Tasman being given the command and when the memoir was written. However, 9 months later, in August that same year, they were sailing out of Batavia, which, given previous voyages sometimes taking years to prepare, this seems like quite a quick turnaround. Part of this was a bit of hustle to get the expedition underway. They wanted to sail during the summer months, possibly due to it being warmer and the weather being a bit more amicable, especially when you're sailing so far south, close to Antarctica. Not that they knew Antarctica was there, though. The other thing that probably helped their ability to get the expedition set up so quickly was that this came at a pretty good time. The Dutch government had recently signed a peace treaty with the Portuguese, so supplies were possibly a bit easier to come by, and the fact the council were in a position to take some vessels away from military duty at all was part of the reason why they commissioned the voyage in the first place. The last little tidbit I'll leave you with is that just before this voyage in 1642, the last major mission that Tasman went on was sailing to Palembang in Sumatra. While he was there, he was to collect some cargo, which was pretty standard stuff, but he was also tasked with capturing a Chinese pirate, who had been plaguing the area doing pirate stuff, which, naturally, the VOC wasn't super into. Tasman was also instructed to punish the locals if they didn't allow him to do either of those two things. He returned a few months later with the cargo and Chinese pirate in his hold, and it seems, in a rather uncharacteristic move, he was able to use minimal force to achieve his goal. Next time, we will dive into the detail of the instructions that the Batavian Council gave to Tasman, which talked about where he should go, how he should conduct himself, how he should lead, and what happens if he were to die on this voyage. From there, we will begin his journey across the ocean that would bring him into the history books. If you want to get in touch, my email and social media are on historyaotearoa.com. Aotearoa spelt Aotearoa. You can also find helpful resources there, like transcripts and sources. If you would like to support Hans, you can do so through donating via Patreon or giving us a review. As always, haere tu atu, hoki tu mai. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.